Hello and welcome to the Family Architect Studio. I'm Philippa Scott, your host, and I have with me Nick Taylor. Nick, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. We are going to talk about Nick's birth experiences, but we're also going to talk about how Nick moved through the challenges of her early births and the journey that she went on to get her to a place where she could have the birth that she was designed for. So we're going to have a chat, and this will be two episodes. So sorry about that. You're going to have to come back again because there's a lot to share, and I really want you to get the full story here, but I don't want it to be too big and have to listen to it all in one chunk. So we're going to break it up a little. So Nick, before your home birth, there was a whole chapter of healing and growth. So take us back. Who were you before you started your healing journey?
Someone who thought that I had contributed to what had happened with my births, and that I had not made the right choices with care providers, or that I could have done things differently. I think a lot of doubt and regret was there with before healing and accepting what had happened and how to embrace that as part of who I was and the journeys of those birth experiences and becoming a mum. So yeah, very different to where I am now, I think.
Yeah.
Very confident in who I am as a mum and a woman, I think, now compared to, even before having kids. It's definitely an experience becoming a mum. So yeah.
Absolutely. So what pain or trauma from your earlier experiences led you to seek the healing?
More so almost betrayal of not being heard and not being valued or respected. That was the main things, because obviously with my first birth, I worked with you after that, because the main contributing factor to my birth injury was that I wasn't listened to, that I wasn't believed that where I was in the labor, and because I was too calm for a first-time mom and it wasn't, hours and hours of labor like they expected. And because I had my own way of doing things and wanted, not to be checked and not to be have any kind of interference in the birth, that it was, they didn't believe me, and then things kind of cascaded from there. So it was more, the betrayal of not being heard and seen as Nick. I was a first-time mum. I was in that box, not a person, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
what would you know?
Yeah. You're a first-time mum. You've never done this before. You wouldn't know. You've got hours, the kind of normal things, the textbook things, I suppose, that they are taught in hospitals in particular, that you need to fit in that box. And that's, if you're a first-time mum, that's where you are, that age, that kind of thing, rather than seeing me as a person and what my body was doing, and not trusting that I knew what my body was doing. And, I'm very in tune with my body. I always have been with my cycles and things like that. And, very in tune with things that are different and happening with my body, and have always been like that. So was quite, it made me doubt myself and my own feelings and thoughts as well. I think that because the outside who dealt with birth in particular weren't seeing what I was feeling, it made me doubt maybe that wasn't what was happening for me, and which kind of, goes against your intuition and self-belief of what you think is right for you and what's happening for you. So
absolutely. So when we did that work together, what shifted for you? What was that in that first between, or in the immediate, I suppose, because you then were preparing for your second birth?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of it was I got rid of the guilt of what I could have done differently to prevent it happening, how you know, things, little things like, so my original midwife wasn't there for the actual birthing day. And we had had conversations around me using the bath early and not being checked and why, and, you know, the code words that we would have instead of, you know, failing to progress, it was going to be, you know, let's try a different position, let's pop out of the bath. That wasn't written down in the notes. And I think, and that wasn't like specifically written on my birth plan that I would get in the bath when I was ready and I'd get out if things weren't, if things were slowing down or they noticed that things, or could offer suggestions to help the labor progress. Mm. I feel like because that wasn't in my case notes as our plan, and because I went straight into active labor, I couldn't have those conversations with them. Yeah, I was like, well, I could have done this. I should have done this. You should have had it written down. yeah, so a lot of that was like on me, like what could I have done differently? How could I have prevented it?
Yeah.
And I think the work I did with you, the biggest thing for me was I like the idea of empowering myself, like I'm okay, and supporting me and working through.
Well, just getting babe on the piggle.
What I did was fine, and that they should have done something. They were the ones in the wrong. They were the ones that had wronged me at the time where I needed someone and trusted those particular care providers to do and be what I needed them to be and support the birth. And that's why I was birthing in a hospital, you know. So I believe that a hospital was where I needed to be and that midwives were there to support me with my birth and how I needed to birth. And because that didn't happen, and I think because of all the preparation I'd done before having babies, a bit of a birth nerd. I don't know, always have been. I remember looking at my mum's birth, childbirth and pregnancy book and being obsessed with it. So I did a lot of work beforehand of like what I wanted. I never wanted to heal from a birth. I didn't want to have birth trauma. So I did hypnobirthing and I really empowered myself as to what I wanted and what to look for. And, you know, I had those conversations with my midwives and felt really empowered and supported. So I think a lot of that was hard when not necessarily like I said, the birth wasn't a traumatic thing. It was the injury. And then finding out afterwards it was because I wasn't listened to or respected as a person. Was the biggest betrayal. Like that was the hardest thing to get through because I was like, I did everything right. I did the yoga classes, I did the classes, I did the research. I advocated for myself prior to, like my mum and my husband all knew what I wanted and were trying to advocate for me during the birth. And that was really hard. And I know even my mum has a lot of regret and trauma from that birth because she wishes she pushed harder to say, no, put her in the bath. You're not checking her. That's not what we want. You know, she's fine. Baby's fine. You've checked the heart rate. Like, just put her in the bath kind of thing. So she regrets not pushing harder for that. But then again, like, we didn't know, you know. Yes, mum had her own babies in hospitals and, you know, that was years ago now. But, you know, she didn't really know how far to push and, you know, what she could say and what, not her rights were, but kind of, almost like her place of like telling a midwife what to do kind of thing. Like she wasn't sure how far to push it, I suppose. And, you know, she doubted maybe that I did want that or maybe if I wanted to get checked so I could get in the bath or something like that. But I think because my birth partners were so good at protecting me from what was going on, I didn't know any of that until after the fact. So, yeah, kind of working through that and, you know, saying like I didn't blame my birth partners for that, my husband and my mom. I was like, we did with what we knew at the time. Like we couldn't have done anything differently. The baby was healthy, I was healthy, and then we just worked a way of getting through that and letting go of that, and that the afterbirth side of things didn't go the way I'd planned. So I think that's a big thing with the trauma stuff I did with you, was letting go of that and knowing that I didn't do anything wrong and I deserved to be heard and I deserved to have a voice, I think was a big thing. Like, it wasn't, you know, well, they were the midwives, that was the hospital policy, that was what had to happen kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
that that was wrong and it was okay for me to feel betrayed and angry, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely got rid of the fear, I suppose, of having another, because I knew we wanted to have another one soon. And that's why I was like, nah, I need to do this first. Because I think I fell pregnant with Robbie the week after we finished with our trauma stuff. So, yeah, I just feel like that helped me move through it and know what I wanted. And I was a bit more firm the next time and more sure of what I wanted and that I knew what I wanted and knew what they were going to ask this time and knew kind of what the medical system was like, I suppose. So I could empower myself and I had things ready to go at my appointments before they asked the question, like things like, you know, do you want a planned episiotomy? And I had the article from Queensland Health to say there is no research to show that that's going to help. There's actually more research to show that that's going to hinder and cause more damage. So hard pass. So, yeah, that was a lot of empowering me to make those choices and be advocate for myself more beforehand as well, to be like, this is how you are going to support me, rather than, you know, this is how we do this, this is how we do that. It was like, this is how I will birth, mm-hmm. and this is how you can support me, what your role is, rather than the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, this is what we provide, this is what we do. It was like, I'm coming to you, and this is what you need to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was a massive healing part, was knowing that I could say that and request and tell them how to care for me,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was a big shift, which definitely helped with the whole, you know, will this happen again? Is my body going to do it again? Kind of trauma as well. Like, that physical part of birth was that I knew I wanted to have another vaginal birth. So I had to believe that my body could do that and let go of that fear and that each birth is different, each baby is different, and believe in myself again that I could, because a lot of that too after the fact was, you know, you should have a cesarean, you should be induced, you should have a planned episiotomy. Like, there was a lot of doubt around it for the next time anyway. And because I had healed that part, I think I could go in and go, no, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I want, this is what I need, and this is how you can support me, be part of this, really. So yeah, that was my most important part of healing, I think, was the empowerment.
You know what I mean? Amazing. So you had another birth in the system,
mm-hmm.
And it was better.
It was.
But it was still not what you wanted. Can you talk about what happened there that wasn't, maybe what didn't align for you?
So I went through MGP again and I, like I said, went to all the appointments with, this is what happened last time, this is not going to happen again. And the midwife I had was all great and gravy and all on board. And about 36 weeks, she started saying things like, we don't want you in the bath too long because it will soften all the scar tissue and then it'll kind of blow out again, and we don't want to do this because this might happen. And I said to my husband, I've been red flags at the moment, like I need you to know this is what you need to say to her, this is what you need to say in the moment,
mm.
I need you to back me 100% and say, no, this is what we want, we're doing this, feel the pull, we're getting in, kind of thing. And he was like, okay, yep. And I Googled and I asked my hypnobirthing coach and I was like, is this true, like, is this a real thing, or is this just a, you know, a medical thing where in the textbook it says only have a woman in the bath for an hour, or, you know, is this actually backed by research? That's my big thing. I'm a research person and I need to find out if it's real. So, yeah. And then by 39 weeks, she went on emergent leave and I was given to another midwife. So the continuity of care that I tried to go for again didn't happen. So my initial thing was, red flag, this is going to happen to me again. This is what happened last time. I didn't have my primary midwife at birth. But instead of panicking, I remember ringing my mum and she was like, okay, how are we feeling? And I was like, well, I'm meeting with this new midwife and we're going to tell her what's going to happen. And she was like, okay. And mum came with me. I think Matt came with me too. And I remember being really blunt. And I think I may have come across a bit rude, but I was like, I'm having a baby in a week. So you need to just know. I meet you again in the birthing suite. So you need to know what I need and what I expect. So I remember being really blunt. She was like, oh, we'll get the other midwives in that could be there just in case I'm not there. So, you know, all of us. And she brought them all in and I met all three of them. And I was like, right, this is what's going to happen. I want the bath when I want the bath. I'm a hypnobirthing mum, so don't touch me. Don't talk to me. Talk to mum and Matt. And I want to know everything that's going on. Like, I need to know why we're not just because, or unless I'm in immediate danger or my baby's in immediate danger, even then you should be able to explain to me what's happening and why that needs to happen. This is what needs to happen. And she was like, yeah, you get in the bath whenever you're ready, babe. Like, bring this and we'll get it ready when you want to come up. Like, yep, 100%. You do you. This is your birth. And I was like, okay, she's saying all the right things. I'm feeling good. Yeah, so I laid at home a bit longer with him and then went in and she'd started running the bath. There was no question about it, like how long you've been in labor. She asked Maddie and mum those questions. She let me do my thing. I remember she came in and I walked myself into birth suite, which was different from last time. And I cried because I was like, this is not happening. Like my first birth, I was wheeled in. I don't remember how we got to the room. It was that full on from the get go that I was like, this isn't happening. She gave me a hug and she said, I'm going to go. You're going to make this your space. We're having a baby today. And she came in with a big smile and she hugged my mom and she hugged me and Maddie. And she was so excited to be part of it. And she'd only met us a week ago. Mm-hmm. And it just felt better. And I was like, okay, this is good. And then, yeah, like I labored on the floor for a bit. And then I was like, nah, I think I want the bath. And they're like, she wants the bath. And it was like, yep, cool, no worries. They helped me in. They got me pillows. It was just so good. And she was so good not to talk to me either. Like, whenever I opened my eyes and looked up, she would go,
it was true that
in terms of, did I do anything to you? And then she'd try to whisper across the bath to my mum or to Matt as to what needed to happen so they could be like, move your leg, do this, do that. And then when I did speak to her and I was like, is he coming? She's like, yes, you're doing an amazing job. And, you know, even the pushing part, because the big thing for having him was breathing him out because of all the trauma from before. To keep everything intact, it was hands off, breathing through in the water. And she was like, this is all you. You can do it. You just need to breathe this baby out. You can do this. And I did. And then everyone celebrated and it just felt amazing. And then, you know, in hospital, you have to get out of the bath to birth the placenta. That was why I got on the bed. And then from there, it just kind of rushed. You know, the cord was clamped because it was white so they could cut it and get rid of it. And I'd forgotten that I wanted this time to have the placenta birth before. And because it was just, I felt so good because I was like, I just did that. God, like I had this baby in the bath like I wanted. You know, this is great. So I didn't think to say, oh, I want to birth the placenta. I don't think I'd written it in the birth plan in the end. So I missed things, little things like that. And then it was, they needed to check me to see if I'd torn. And again, they gave me the gas like the first time and I had the gas, they checked and they're like, oh, there's a little second degree. And I remember bursting into tears and being like, oh, I didn't do it. Like I've wrecked it, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, no, you've done an amazing job. Everything else is intact. It's a different place. And I was like, okay, I suppose that's better. And she said, I can do it, but because of the trauma down there, I want to get a surgeon to do it, I think it was. So she called someone to come and do it. And the way I was treated from there was where it kind of fell apart, I suppose, for that bubble feeling. Mm-hmm. And it was, I felt that this lady that had come down to do the repair, I think she was an OB, maybe, because it was a second degree and a midwife can do it. She was pissed that she had to come down. Mm-hmm. So she was not very nice. I'd just given birth and then she was all up in my grill and she was rough, I suppose. Like, I, not in a way that hurt, just in a way that she was just like, okay, up, legs up, do this, scoot bum down, jab, jab, jab. And then because I was on the gas, it was uncomfortable. Like, I can feel being stitched up. And I was like, I've never been told that you could feel that because I was repaired in theatre last time and put under. So I never had that experience. So I wasn't, I don't know, like warned of what would happen, or I didn't feel supported, or I felt violated. That's the word that I used when I called my best friend after the birth. I was like, I felt violated because I'd just given birth and I was in this bubble and then my legs were in stirrups and someone was inside me and she was just getting a job done. There was no feeling. There was no, are you okay? There's, you know, I've got, it'll take me 20 minutes. It'll be, you know, that kind of care as to what was happening and acknowledgement that that's not a comfortable thing to have someone up in your grill once you've pushed a baby out. And she was like, does it hurt or is it just uncomfortable? And I was like, oh, I think I can feel it. And she's like, well, I'll just give you some more pain meds. And then she gave me some more and then kept going. And she was just puffy and puffy with me because I was making noises and just like squirming a bit because it was so uncomfortable and not what I expected. And then I felt not like kind of, I didn't feel safe. I didn't feel comfortable with her there. It wasn't like, I feel like it's such a vulnerable thing after giving birth that you need to be monitored, I suppose. I need someone to tell me that I'm okay and I've done a good job and I can cry and, you know, rub my shoulder or something, you know, that kind of hold me after
having treat you like a human.
Yeah. So that happened. And then they're like, you can have a shower. And I was like, okay, great. And the first shower was great. I didn't get that afterborn because I went to theater. And then came back in and they're like, look, you can't stay. You have to go home. And I was like, oh, okay. And I looked at Maddie because the plan was to bring our daughter in to meet him so that we weren't just bringing a baby home. We'd done lots of prep work about that and how we were going to introduce Robbie into the family. And so it long felt that she wasn't replaced because there was only 20 months between them. So it was kind of like, I've done a lot of research again on how to, you know, bring the new baby in and how to introduce him and make her feel safe and make her feel important and things like that. So it was like, okay, we can't stay, right? Well, we don't have the car seat because mum came in the car with us, so we keep the car seat out. You'll have to go home, grab Bon, grab the car seat and come back. And then mum had to organise getting home and it was just, it just seemed rushed. It just seemed, and they're like, we're going to do a 6-hour discharge. He was born at 12, 17. By about 2-3 o'clock maybe, they were like, oh, you can go up 4 hours. And I was like, well, my husband's just left to go and get our daughter and the car seat. So I will leave when they come back because I can't leave. I've got nowhere to go. I've got no one to take me home. Mum's not got a car here. She came with us. So she's waiting for her husband to come and get her. So you're stuck with me until I'm done. I don't remember, you know, being given food or anything. I had snacks in my bag that I was munching on. I think we had to ask for something to eat, whether it was a sandwich or something. Basic, because obviously I went into labor at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I hadn't eaten much. I had Weet-Bix at home, I think, before I left, but I'm not an eat during labor kind of person. I'm just a focus on what you're doing, drink some water kind of person. So even little things like that, not even being off because they were trying to get rid of me so fast. And I was like, oh, okay. And their reasoning was, oh, you're an MGP, so you can call a midwife. You've got access to a midwife, so you can go home. We're overstaffed, we're overworked, which is some of what is wrong with the system is they're understaffed and overworked. So I get them. So that, for me, where it became, you know, I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning and I was home by 6:39. And I was like, I didn't have time to process that. I just had a baby. And I remember ringing my best friend on the Monday and crying and saying, that was really hard. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, well, everyone just celebrated how well I did birthing him. But it was hard. It hurt. It was really hard. I felt like, you know, it took forever for his head to come out. And I felt like, you know, I was rushed out of there and I felt violated with the way that they just wanted to check and sew up and get you out. And I haven't had time to decompress and like tell anyone that because everyone's like, you did so well. You're amazing. And And I was like, yeah, I do feel that, but I also have all these other feelings that I haven't processed. And, you know, I'm home with another child and I'm supposed to just be a mom of two now. Like, that's it. See you later. So it was that was probably the moment where I thought, look, if we're having another one, I'm not going back to hospital. And I kind of floated the idea for a while and I looked into it and I researched it. And then I said to Matt, if we have a third, I'm having the baby at home. And he was like, no way. And I was like, no, that's what I need. And if we want more kids, that's what I need. So, yeah. That's how I got there.
Well, I feel that. I really feel that.
Yeah.
You've answered so many of the questions that I had prepared. And so I'm just coming through to see what is here. So talk to me then. You did some work between, so obviously you did lots of research. And I think it's really important to perhaps talk to what did you have to do to get your husband into a space where he could support the birth of Georgia?
Yes. I was sending lots of reels.
Yeah.
That was my first like snippet things of positive things. I took him to the home birth conference.
Yeah.
That was on the coast. And I didn't really make it an option, to be honest. I was like, look, mate, it's my body. I need this. I know we want to expand our family. And I know, so I want to have a midwife. So home birth has a registered midwife. They have all the emergency stuff that you need that you have in a hospital. And then we'd ring ambulances and whatever. Like there would be a backup plan. There's not just it's a home birth. If it turns to shit, whoops, kind of thing. So I said, you need to get on board. And I took him to meet some midwives. I sent him some stuff, even some stuff from dads was really good, like how dads changed their minds and it came to it. And I just kept talking about it. Like when we have another baby and we have it at home, this is what I'm looking for in a care provider. This is what will happen. This is what we'll do. Like I was talking about it like it was going to happen. There was no ifs, buts, and maybes. It was like, get on board, work it out. And I feel bad in a way that I did that, but I also needed to do that. And I know he trusted me, and his big thing was that he wanted the baby and I to be safe. And for Maddie, he's come such a long way because before we started having kids, his theory was you do what the doctors say, and if they have to cut that baby out to get it out safely, that's what we're doing. The doctors know best was what he said to me. And, you know, he kind of had evolved with each child that we'd had, and we did hypnobirthing, which changed his mindset quite a lot and made him feel more empowered to make choices and to listen in and lean into me and trust me, I think, which was beautiful. So to get him from that to being a home birth dad, I'm pretty proud of him. So, yeah, it was just meeting people. When we met our midwife, I remember leaving the meeting and he was like, I could do that one. Yeah, okay. And he doesn't say much. So that meant, yes, I'm comfortable. I feel safe.
Yeah.
And I said to him, like, you need to ask questions. You need to put your mind at ease so that you can support me. I need you to trust and believe in me. I can do this. And he was like, I know you can. I need to know that there is a backup plan, essentially. There is a, you know, shit's hit the fan plan to keep you and baby alive. I was like, that's fair. That is definitely a fear of mine, and that's something in the back of my mind. And our midwife was great like that, and she was like, he needs to ask questions. He needs to tell me what he's fearful of and what he needs to feel supported, and so that he didn't bring fear into the birth space. So, yeah, there's a lot of talk of like how far away we live from the hospital and, you know, the transfer rates and when women are usually transferred. It's not like the baby's coming out and shit's hit the fan. That's very rare. It's usually before baby comes or after baby comes that you're transferred or, you know, an ambulance is rung or anything like that. So once he kind of figured that out and could see, you know, that these people were highly trained. So our midwife had breech birth training, shoulder dystocia training. You know, I was like, she's one of the safest ones that you're going to want at this birth. You know, we're okay. She's the bomb. She's going to recognize before anything goes wrong. I trust in her that she will know that, you know, something's not safe and we need to do something now. Mm. I trust that this woman can do that for us. And I need you to get there. So what do you need to ask her to get you there? And he was like, I trust you, I trust you. And I was like, but there's something more there for you. I know there is.
Yeah.
So it was more so throughout the journey of the pregnancy that he finally kind of opened up. And the more information he was given, you know, one of his fears was he was going to be the one catching baby.
Yeah.
You know, this day, and the same, that was his fear with number two, that we'd wait too long to go to hospital and not have the baby at home, because everyone got in his head that subsequent kids are faster and, you know, our midwife lived 45 minutes away, and he was like, you know, and I'm like, well, you ring an ambulance, honey. If you're really that worried, unlock the door, ring an ambulance, ring it, you know, my mom, my sister, a support person to come to be with the kid so that you can support me. But ultimately, I believe I can do this regardless of if someone's here or not. So you just need to catch. And he was like, okay. So we had a plan of, you know, I said, Maddie's big thing is that he wants everyone here early so that I don't have this baby without his. And she was like, okay, that's fine. She was like, I want you to keep me updated in the days before. Like if you lose your mucus plug, if you have more, if you're nesting flat out, if you're, you know, any kind of behaviors that have changed, any body things that have changed, let me know so I know things that are happening so that we can make those decisions. So once we kind of made that plan and Matt knew that he could call the midwife if he was unsure or if he just wanted her there, she was happy to come.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when he kind of settled and was like, righto, I can do this. And the other thing was giving him a role. So he, you know, was going to set up the birth pool. He had to set up all the plumbing stuff and, you know, fill it up. And he was like, right, how long does it take to fill? What am I going to do here? How do I keep this, you know, water temperature at temperature and all these things? And it was like, right, well, your job is to ring us, blow the pool up, start filling the pool. Easy. Leave it at that. Like, that's your job. If it doesn't get filled in time, it's a land birth. Like, it's okay. But he knew that I wanted to have another water birth, and that's what his thing was. He wanted to make sure that was done. So, yeah, once we got all that stuff, you know, even the week before when we had the pool set up in the birth space, we had everything there. We had our meeting with this second midwife and had all those discussions about when they would come and how they would help and that they would keep the water warm and things like that, that he was like worried about. That was all kind of ironed out and you could see him start to relax. So I think that was really cool. But yeah, it was a lot to get him there, definitely. Yeah, the information, sending him the information and talking about it as if it was going to happen before we fell pregnant, so that he knew what he was entering into. Like when we start trying for number three, going to be a home birth. So get there before we start trying for anything. So, but yeah, it was definitely a journey, and definitely I think their biggest thing is because they're not the ones giving birth and you're their everything. Like, you know, we already had two children. So if they lost me,
yeah,
he'd have to do it alone. So I get the fears that, you know, birthing partners can have. And I was just so gung-ho because I was like, I can do this and I'm going to do this. And I'm very much a I'll prove you wrong kind of person. So, you know, when they told me after Bonnie that they'd have to have a cesarean because of the scarring and stuff, I was like, right, wrong answer. And I found someone that told me that.
Yeah.
And I worked with a pelvic floor physio and I worked with you and I was like, nah, I can do this. So he knows that about me, that I, once I get my mindset on something, I'm going to do it. I'm going to make it happen and I'm going to show everyone that I can do that and myself that I can do that too. So I think he knew it was going to happen either way, whether he was on board or not. So, and obviously it was easier for him and better for him to get on board with it. And just, yeah, seeing him during it and after, and the way he talks about it and the way he, once he realized after I'd had George that that's what I needed and he could see a difference in me compared to the last two births, I think that's when he was like, okay, I understand now.
Yeah.
You could just see that in him, that he was like, okay, this all makes sense. This, this is so different to what we'd had. And he, I think he enjoyed it, to be honest. I think when I went into labor with George, he was a bit worried. But I think it, after it settled in the way, because it was so calm and it was so supported and such a beautiful experience, it wasn't rushed. No one, you know, rushed everything off or anything like that. And then when we had that moment to ourselves and he went, you just don't even look like you've had a baby. You look so different. And he looked different. And that was worth it. Like to see him get there in that way. And then afterwards understand it. I think like he was like, right, it's happening. Ask questions, look at more things.
Yeah.
And then to see it, he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So
Exposure makes a big difference, I think. Like, you know, I remember speaking to the two of you, you know, and just even him talking to more than, you know, like just lots of different people over that few months.
Yeah.
Like just they all add up, right? If everybody's saying the same thing, then it's proof on proof and it starts to become real and possible. And I, my husband had a similar journey, but baby number three was a free birth because there were no midwives, right? So, but I remember his mum telling me after baby three, after the free birth, she was taking him to go and pick up his car because he decided to do that during my labor. But he said to her, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
So when I then had my fourth at home with the midwife, it was a no-brainer, right? And 100% giving them a job. His job is always the water.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think they need something to focus on because you do everything else. Like, you know when it's happening, you know what you need and how to move your body, and they just have to wait and move around you. And you can't plan for how you're going to labor either. Like, we talked about, you know, the way that he could touch me or support me or stand on certain things or help me sway or positions and things like that. But until you're in it with that particular baby in that particular birth, they just kind of have to be like, right, where do you want me? What am I doing? You know, and they just have to work around you. Whereas, you know, you're in it and you know what your body needs and you're just doing it. You're doing the dance with your baby and they're just kind of, you know, working around you to support you.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Amazing. So, we're not going to get into the story of George in this episode. This is a teaser, but I do want to, like, what did this birth teach you about the importance of not stopping halfway through your healing, of, you know, like doing whatever it takes to get to where you need to be?
That I was worth that. I was worthy of getting there and having that experience. And I deserved that kind of birth. So the healing needed to happen and keep going. And the birth itself was healing a part of me, knowing that I could do this and I could do it the way I wanted to do it and that I needed to do it. That it kind of finished the healing cycle. I think that was the reward for doing it, but also because we think George could possibly be our last. I'm not 100%, but I think
Hubby's done, but I'm like, I just, no, that's a
no-brainer.
And I was like,
and if I do it again, we're having it home. Like, that's a no-brainer. That's going to happen again. And we would be with our midwife. Like, she's going to definitely have to be there for that one. But, you know, that if this was it, that I've closed that chapter of having babies, that I felt complete in the sense of pregnancy and birth, that I've proven to myself that I can do it. I felt supported. I felt loved. I felt empowered. And I think that's definitely helped the transition of having another little one in the family, but also the postpartum period. Like, I'm a month postpartum. I feel on top of the world. Like, you know, I had postnatal depression the first, postnatal anxiety the second. I just feel amazing this time.
Yeah.
And everything's been different. And I'm obsessed with my birth. Like, I could watch it over and over. Rubbing his head, I could visualize, you know, feeling his head as he was coming out. Like, for the first week, every time I touched his head, it was that feeling. And it was warm and safe and familiar. It wasn't, you know, when I thought about Robbie's birth, I was like, oh my God, it hurts so much. That's all I could think about. Like my vagina hurt. It was, his head was huge. It took forever to come out. That was what I associated with that birth. And then with Bond, it was that I had to get out of the water and I had to be on my side, and it wasn't what I wanted, kind of thing. Yeah. So with this one, there was nothing that I could say, I wish we'd done this, I wish I'd done that. And the other thing was I surrendered. Yeah. The other thing was that my hypnobirthing coach asked me if I was looking for the perfect birth.
Mm.
And I said, no, I'm looking for a vibe where I feel safe and supported. Whether that ends up being I have the baby on the floor in the lounge room or we have to go to hospital because things change. I want to feel safe and supported, and I want that vibe to be calm and trusting. I want whoever is around me needs to trust me. However birth unfolds, it's about the trust and love.
Mm.
That's what I'm chasing.
Yeah.
Yes, I would love to have a water birth again. That's definitely something I want.
Absolutely. But
definitely more so the vibe I was going for. And I got that.
I love that.
I got that vibe.
I love
that's
that.
What I needed.
Yeah.
Yes.
So. It's, you know, there's a detractors from home birth or naysayers would say that it's all about this perfect experience. And that,
yes.
To, you know, that women are trying to, they just want it because they want, you know, they're looking for an experience, but it's not that. It's about safety.
Yeah. Most women that I work with and that I talk to, it's about feeling safe, supported and loved, and like your nervous system can relax into the space so that your physiology can do what it's designed to do.
Yeah.
And you articulated that so beautifully. So thank you. So what if you could speak to the woman who settles for better but not what I truly wanted, what would you say?
You deserve what you want. And you can have it.
Mm.
And I think it's finding the way that you can have it. Like that fine line between the perfect birth
mm.
and what you deserve. So it's, I suppose you are looking for a particular thing or a particular experience. Like I think rather than the particulars of like having a water birth or having the baby at home, it was more, like I said, the security and that feeling of being supported and respected and loved,
mm.
that's what I was chasing. And that is something that everyone can have, whether you have a baby at home or in a hospital. I believe that if you have the right support around you and they know that that's what they are there for and that's what you need from them,
mm.
and making sure that you know that you are worthy of that and that can happen for you, then that's what you chase. Don't settle for, especially birth, you can't relive that. You can't redo that again. And I know you can have more babies and, you know, try it again, but you'll always have that birth that you think of, like my first birth.
Mm.
And then my second being that I, you know, didn't feel supported. I felt like I was just, okay, you're done. See you later. Thanks for coming.
Mm.
So that's, yeah, not okay. That's not something that we should accept.
Yeah.
So it's about being not forceful, but being comfortable and empowered enough in yourself that you can tell people what you need and what support you need, mm. because you are worthy of that. And I think it makes a big difference personally in your recovery after having a baby and the connection with the baby.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's interesting because there's a lot of talk around healing births, redemptive births, things like that. And I'm not a fan.
No,
I wasn't
chasing that up.
No, I think the birth, it's kind of like we talk about, you know, the disconnect that often happens in relationships around, you know, sex. And we might talk about, you know, like men might see, a lot of men see sex as connection, but for women, they see sex as the possible outcome of connection, right? And so when I think about birth and healing birth, I feel like when we do the healing work, when we come to a place of knowing our worth, knowing what we deserve, knowing our power,
yeah.
and being able to heal the stuff that happened before. And George is giving us his little input. He's got the little grunts and groans here, which is so cute. And would have me lactating if I still was.
But the, like, that piece of healing and stepping into our worthiness, not because the birth went right, not having this birth, because what if something happens at that birth and we haven't done the healing? Do we then not get to heal?
But are you also hanging that on that one baby and that one birth?
So it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And that's what, supposed to heal everything for, you know, all of the kids and all of the births that you've had. Like, if that was supposed to heal me for all three of my babies, and like you say, it didn't go to plan, I feel
like... Did you fail again?
Is it that baby's fault? Mm-hmm. Like, that was the baby that's supposed to heal you and supposed to finish everything and
be what you needed.
Yeah. I think that's not what it should be.
No.
That's not the right mindset to have. That's not healing. That's looking for something to heal you, not necessarily doing the work and finding that.
And I think that's it. Like, it, you can get confidence. I remember with my second birth, because I'd had the Caesar first, then I had the VBAC in the hospital. It was unfortunately a shit show again, but I'd done something. I'd done something different. I'd made different decisions. I'd had a different experience. I still had obstetric violence and all of things, but initially I felt like, yes, I did that thing, right? Like, I did that thing.
Yep.
And it took months for me to realize actually that wasn't how I wanted it to be. And I grieved and I did all the things and I too was, you know, like, people had been the problem in my first two births, right? So when I chose to pre-birth, by default I had to, there wasn't a midwives. It was about choosing the people in the room and knowing their philosophy and whether or not they were going to harm or hinder, or whether they were going to support and hold space. And, but you know, that birth, she let me shine.
Yeah.
She let me shine, but she didn't heal the two previous. And the next one along, again, fabulous experience. She didn't heal those other two. I had to do the work independently to heal those other births and to heal me as a woman, as a person, and my matrescence. Yep. All of that had to be healed separately.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of pressure to place on any one experience, especially because that experience comes down to very few hours.
Yes.
You know, like, it's a day in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like saying, well, if I have the perfect wedding, I'll have a perfect marriage. And that doesn't work either. No. It's only the beginning of something. And if you go into that marriage with lots of unhealed pain and trauma, then it doesn't matter how great the wedding's going to be, right? So, you know, it really is about doing the deeper healing work, because then you have the best chance of showing up to that other experience.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting too is we talk about this idea of, I did it, right? When Alana had Paisley, she didn't have this I did it moment, because she just did it.
Yeah.
And she wasn't fighting anything. She wasn't coming back from anything. She wasn't proving anything to anyone. Because nobody doubted her, or at least in her immediate world, that's how she was brought up, was to believe she could do this thing. Whereas for me and for you, that second birth and third birth were all about claiming back what was ours and should have been ours by right all the way through, but we had to claim it back. And that's where you get the VBAC punching the sky, I did it kind of thing, is because of what was taken away and the fight that it takes to get to that moment. Whereas my wish is that all women could have the kind of birth that Alana had, where she didn't have to fight back to get anything back. It was her birthright. Yep. And she got to have that purely by default.
Yeah.
And so it's just a thing she did, which is wonderful. No trauma to recover from, no reclaiming of anything.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important when we think about birth to understand where we're coming from with other experiences in that space, because they will determine how we come at that. And if you come at a birth with an attitude of reclaiming and so on, if it sets you up differently, and you are more impacted by trauma in those moments than if you, and so healing is even more, in my opinion,
Yeah. I think for my daughter as well, she's 4. Watching, you know, coming to the appointments and we told her everything because she kept asking.
Yeah.
And the plan was not to have her there originally, but she asked to be there and she kept asking. And I was like, okay, let's investigate this. And she says to me, Mommy, I'm going to have my babies in the pool like you. And I said, oh, you're going to have your babies at home or in hospital? And she was like, at home? Like, it was a silly question.
Yeah.
And birth wasn't scary for her.
Really?
It was a normal thing.
Yeah.
It was, Mommy had the baby at home. And I love that for her. And I'm also grateful that I could make her part of that and show her that birth was a part of life and that it's something that women can do. And it's not someone else's thing. Like, it's, you know, it's your own experiences and it's your thing and your, and women are powerful. And I really love that for her. And that's her norm. That's what she thinks is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I, as a mom, I was like, I've done something.
Yeah.
So I think that's also been a really beautiful thing to come out of it too. It's like, that's how she thinks birth should be. And I love that for her.
And, you know, like that's come full circle for me, because my 4-year-old wasn't my first home birth, and my, you know, she was 6 when I had my second home birth, and she was there for those. So she said to me, is that even a question? Of course we have a baby at home, right? Like, and she did.
Yeah.
And so when you do, you're shifting culture
for
your family, if nothing else. But that ripples out. It ripples out and has exponential impact.
Yep.
Thank you for sharing this part of your story. We will be back. And we're going to dive a bit deeper into George's birth. We hope you'll join us again for that. Stay tuned, everybody. Stay tuned.